Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin. Be'ez Hashem, Shalom Bayis, Shir number 512. We're going to talk about romance versus true love. We have a saying, what you see is what you get, which is not correct because one may not see correctly. So what you see is not necessarily what you will get. It's also generally true that we believe what we want to believe. And therefore, it's also true that we see what we want to see. Very often, you have warning signs that are prominent as flashlights, but they're ignored. It's not because of anything other than it's human nature that we desire to for certain things, and we want to see those things, and we convince ourselves of those things that we see. You know, the Torah says, "Ki ha-shoychet ya'aver eini chachamim," that a bribe, if you accept a bribe, which you're not allowed to, but if you do, it'll blind the eyes of the wise. That means that the bribe will distort a judge's critical faculties, and he will favor the litigant who bribed them. But there's many pirushim on this, and one deeper meaning of this verse, this pasuk, is literally, a judge who has been bribed cannot see the facts that favor the opposite party. He cannot see something that's not favorable to the one who gave him the bribe because he has been blinded. And just like a blind person can't see, no matter how logical and convincing one may be, neither can a judge who accepts a bribe. It blinds him. This is with every human being. We have our biases. It's called psychological blindness. Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yutes Amid Aleph, says that a person doesn't see his own defects, literally, and pointing it out to him, generally speaking, unless he really works on himself, is like showing a painting to a blind person. Psychological blindness is as real as physical blindness. And we need to ask Hashem to help us, be pekeach ivrim, not just to allow us to see, to continue to see with our physical eyes, but to see with our spiritual eyes, with our psychological eyes. A young woman may have this real idealized image of her chassan, and he may have an idealized image of a kala. They see each other this way because they want to see each other this way. Their desire may blind them from other character blemishes, and they are bribed by that fantasy, and they're psychologically blind by this bribe. Now again, it is part of Hashem's plan to get people together to have that connection. That's a beautiful thing, a warmth and friendship, sometimes the infatuation, but like we always talked about, it has to be balanced with a clarity and hadracha. But here is a mashal that he gives. I think it's a beautiful mashal, what he describes, that even if someone experienced that blind love, that infatuation, it has to come to a real relationship subsequently. And it's just like by a tree. Often you have some trees, and sometimes the way fruit trees are developed, you have a blossom. It blossoms some sort of flowers of some sort, and then the blossoms fall off. And then it's replaced by actual fruit. It's a good mushel for a marriage in different stages. It may have started off with a romance, with an infatuation, and that fades away. That's like the blossom falling off, but then it needs to be replaced by real fruit, which is true and mature love. This romance phase, in many cases, could last for 2 months, 3 months, sometimes even 2 years, but then blinders are removed. And now each one sees things that they didn't see before. The key really is when this happens to people in their marriages early on, it could come as a shock. It could come as a surprise because you didn't see it coming. The blinders are now off. And the mistake is that it results in a disillusionment, a disappointment. Because now you have a knowledge that the other person is indeed a human being and has some character defects. And we need to work very hard not to allow us to get disappointed, not to allow us to get disillusioned. Because why? Because character defects is what makes us human. We don't live with malachim. Someone once said that God help the man who won't marry until he finds a perfect woman, and God help him still more if he finds her. Doesn't mean we should overlook character defects, but one should not be surprised when they discover them, because that is the story of every given person. You have to do a lot of davening and look for, you know, for siyata d'shmaya. And for the most of us, 90% and more, these character traits can be worked out between themselves. And sometimes they need professional help. Now, Reb Tversky brings an example of a narcissism, which he's going to explain here, which does require outside help. So he says as follows, as an anecdote. Yitzchak did not tell Edel that he was a narcissist because he didn't think he was. So he writes here, Rabbi Tversky, a narcissist is someone who is totally absorbed with himself, expects nobody to adore him, expects everyone to adore him, thinks the world owes him a living, and never thinks himself to be at fault. The information Edel's parents had was that he was a fine character. No one in the yeshiva was aware of his narcissism, and if they were, they did not report it. Shortly after the wedding, Edel realized that there was a problem. Yitzchak expected to be waited on hand and foot. If Edel said anything that he took as criticism, he would flare up. Now, unfortunately, Edel had no way of knowing that Yitzchak was a narcissist. Seeing that there was a problem, Edel suggested that they see a marriage counselor, which Yitzchak refused, because he felt there was nothing wrong with him. Narcissism is a stubborn character defect, and if it is discovered, spouse should avail himself or herself of competent counseling. So this is one of those cases, and no one should assume just because you have a little self-interest that you're a narcissist of any serious order, but it does exist, and sometimes you need outside counseling for that. But the idea is, you enjoy a beauty of a blossom of a fruit tree, but you know it needs to fall away in order for the real fruit to come out. Same thing, every couple needs to know if they're excited about their marriage, they really feel that pull. But the marriage fantasy concept of that early relationship was not meant to stay, and we view it as a loss. But we can't do that. We need to really move on from it. Now, he brings the yesod of Sheva Brachas that applies all through marriage. There's aspects of temporary pleasures, and then there's an example of real everlasting pleasures. Feelings that remain always is the chasadim that you do one for the other, true working on themselves, true giving of oneself, and looking at the other person from their vantage point. He brings a story from Rav Moshe Leib Sasever that when he learned, you know, he learned about what true love is from listening to two drunks. He overheard two drunks talking. One of them said, Stefan, I love you with all my heart. And the other one answered, no, Ivan, you don't love me. And they were drunk, and he began crying. He says, no, I swear, Stefan, I love you with all my heart. And Stefan answered, if you love me, Ivan, then tell me, what do I need and where do I hurt? And Moshe Leib Sasever overheard this conversation between two drunks. And he said, he learned from that, that if you do not feel another person's needs and his pain, then you don't love him. True love is beyond passion. It's ava v'achva v'shalom v'reyes and sheva brachas. Brotherhood, friendship, commitment. Brotherhood and friendship are ikar characteristics in true intimacy. Otherwise, you're two people living under the same roof. There's no intimacy. Intimacy means not the passion. There's nothing wrong with infusing passion. And it is an inyan to do that. And it is very important. But intimacy is mutual honesty and trust and sharing and support and a feeling of true closeness. Commitment means that it is, you see, there's something called interest. When you're interested in something, And then you're committed to something. When you're interested in something, you do it. You do things only when it's convenient, when you're interested. But when you're committed, you make no excuses and give it all you got. And you're intense about that commitment. It's not enough to feel the love for the other. You have to show it by giving of yourself to the other. We mentioned all the way in an early shiur, Shalom Bayis, the story of the Medrash of Shimon Bar Yochai, that a couple didn't have children after 10 years and they were divorced and they were going to divorce. Shimon Bar Yochai says, this is not a divorce coming from because you don't like each other, you love each other. So make a celebration. Just like you did it by your marriage, make a celebration by your divorce too. And they followed his advice. And there was a party, the husband got a little high or drunk, and he told his wife, whatever you really cherish, you could bring back to your father's house. He fell asleep. Wife had the servants carry him to the father's house. He woke up, "Where am I?" Wife said, "You're in my father's home." "What am I doing here?" he asked. Wife said, "Didn't you tell me that whatever I cherish most should go to my father's house? I love you more than anything in the world, so I brought you to my father's house." They returned to Rav Shimon when he heard the story. He was ma'ir rachamim on them and daven for them, and they were blessed with children. So this couple had much love for each other. But what was the decisive act that wrote all the other acts? She took the most precious thing and brought her to her father's house. The acting of it. There is something that Rabbi Tversky always talks about in the theme of most of his books, which is low self-esteem. And they're often fearful of being rejected, and mutual commitment in marriage is reassuring. And that's why it helps to build self-esteem when you show that commitment, when you go through those rough spots. We go beyond and we reject this disposable era in which we live, where you throw away things that we feel that are not functioning optimally, in the best way. Rather, you make efforts to repair it. So commitment means I'm here thick and thin, and I'm going to help and support you. That is a vital ingredient to every marriage. A marriage is not enough to be inspired by passion and by infatuation, but needs to be attained, it needs to be maintained. Similar like losing weight, you could go on a crash diet, lose weight, but unless there's a reasonable diet maintained through a long period of time, a change in lifestyle, in the way you eat, if you don't do that, the weight will be regained. Same thing with marriage. Component of true, real love is to be continuous with it. It's similar like a jetliner, when it takes off, it uses a huge amount of its fuel for the takeoff. But the takeoff itself won't get you to the destination. You need adjustments and maintenance to get through the whole flight until you land. Same thing over here. The infatuation, the passion, you may look at that sometimes when it's there as a takeoff, as to get you moving, but that is not sustainable. What's also not sustainable is the feelings. Feelings come and go. They fluctuate. The many variables in marriage, many matzavim, and degree of feelings could vary from day to day. Sometimes there's a change of career. Sometimes there's chalila, an illness, Hashem Yishmerenu. Sometimes children growing up, leaving home, economic stresses, tsar over various things, and it affects the way a person feels, the challenges, responsibilities. So it's expected in marriage. Someone shouldn't panic when their feelings are not always in that high warmth mode. But the idea is when you expect it, and don't think just because you feel differently now, or you feel a little down, or you feel a little challenged, that means the marriage is unstable. That's not correct. It's a wrong assumption. It's just that you're living life. And the key is to not be fazed by that and ride those waves and stick to the firm commitment that you have one for the other. Bracha v'atzlacha.